Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me. I feel compelled this morning to talk a little bit about the tragic, brutal terrorist attacks that took place this week at the two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. It was a chilling reminder for all of us that hatred is still at work around the globe and that there is a heartbreaking tragedy, not just for our Muslim brothers and sisters, but for all people of faith. Recognize that in the last several years, there have been shootings in all types of different worshiping spaces, whether it be a church in South Carolina, a synagogue in Pittsburgh, and now mosques in New Zealand. It's critical that we remain, as people of faith, united in love and compassion against hate and against division and against bigotry, and that around this wide, diverse, and colorful world, to remind ourselves that we belong to each other. And I hope you will join with me in the next few days and weeks praying for our Muslim brothers and sisters, not just here in Fort Worth, but around the world. And that you will take some time to reach out to your Muslim neighbors, your coworkers, their friends, to express your concern for them in our shared sorrow over this attack. I want you to know that tomorrow I will reach out on your behalf, University Christian Church, to the Muslim leaders here in Fort Worth, and that I will assure them that here at UCC that we stand together with them, because it is vitally important for us as a community of faith, as a congregation, to be clear that we are opposed, unequivocally, opposed to hatred and violence of all types and in all forms. We are, as you have heard, making our way through the holy and sacred season of Lent, and we're using the image of the Exodus, of braving the wilderness, to discern those places where God is inviting us to leave behind in order to be fully alive, to see that there might be things that are from our past that we need to leave behind in order to go to new lands, to discover new directions that God wants us to go in our lives. Now, the story that you're about to hear from Mark's gospel is one that has always fascinated me for a number of different reasons that you will hear in just a few moments. The story takes place in the days following the Transfiguration, which is a story that we talked about just a couple of weeks ago. And as you may remember, at that time, the disciples were sort of bickering with each other. They were arguing amongst one another. And in the midst of that division, in the midst of that argument, they bring to Jesus a man who comes with his son. And the father explains that an evil spirit has seized his son. And he begins to explain that this evil spirit is causing their lives to be quite literally a living hell. And he says that any time that this evil spirit shows up, it throws him to the ground and he begins to foam at the mouth and he grinds his teeth. He goes stiff as a board. And I told your disciples, the man says, I told your disciples hoping that they could deliver him, but they couldn't. But as you'll hear, thankfully, that is how the story begins, but not how it ends.
This morning's reading is from the book of Mark, chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and some scribes arguing with them. When the whole crowd saw him, they were immediately overcome with awe, and they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" Someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so." He answered them, "You faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood, it has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us." Jesus said to him, "If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You spirit that keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" He said to them, "This kind can come out only through prayer." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
I want you to imagine for just a moment that you are that father. Think for just a moment about how hard it is when your child is sick. There's an old phrase that I learned when I became a parent, that when our children are not well, we are not well. Here's this boy foaming at the mouth, their lives a living hell, and there's nothing that he could do about it. You can hear the desperation in his voice, can't you? You can feel his despair. Is there anything worse than watching your child, whatever their age, suffer, to be in pain? Now, I want you to notice that Jesus' first reaction in this moment, when this man brings his son, is to ask a question. How long has he been like this? Jesus asked. Now, I got to be honest with you that I hear that question, and I'm a little bit surprised. In fact, I'm a little bit perplexed. Jesus, this is no time for questions. You can see, Jesus, this boy needs help. Why not heal first and ask questions later? But I wonder, after living with this story for a week in preparation for this morning, if the answer to that question isn't the question itself. How long has he been like this? This is a question, isn't it? This is a question of concern, of care. It's a question of history. But mostly, it's a question that allows him to enter into the pain of this father and of this boy. Notice that Jesus' first impulse is not to try and fix and to heal the pain, but to enter into the pain. His first implication, his first impulse is to not fix or heal, but to enter into the pain. And in many ways, this is a story, isn't it, in that way, of what God is like. I mentioned that we're using the Exodus story as sort of a guide through our season of Lent. And there's a part of the Exodus story where God instructs the Israelites through Moses that they should build a tabernacle. A tabernacle is sort of like a portable sanctuary that they could go. They were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And he says, have them make for me a sanctuary so that I can dwell among them. Make it so that they can take it wherever they go. They'd been having problems, struggles. They'd been grumbling. They'd been attacked. And in the midst of it, God says, I will join them there. Not lift them out of their struggles, but I will meet them in the midst of it. In the midst of all of their suffering, God's desire is not to take them out of the problems, but to enter into it. Maybe you could say it this way, that God's impulse is to join us. Robert Capon, a fascinating, brilliant theologian, tells a story, maybe it's more of an analogy, of a man who's driving in the midst of a snowstorm and finds himself going off the road into a snowbank. Says that in that moment, stranded there by the side of the road, God doesn't put more fuel in the tank. God doesn't change the weather. God doesn't magically make more food appear. God simply opens the door and says, scoot over. You and I, we're gonna ride this one out together. God's impulse is to join. Here in the story that we heard, the man says to Jesus, if you can do anything, Jesus, please do it. He says, take pity on us and help us. Now, the word pity there in Greek is the word splunknizomoi. I want to hear you say splunknizomoi. It's a fun word to say, isn't it? It's a fun word, splunknizomoi. It means, it's from the noun splunknon, which I'm sure most of you know, is the Greek word for bowels, intestines. In other words, he's asking Jesus to enter into it in a way that he feels this pain in his guts. That it becomes for Jesus a gut-wrenching experience. He's saying, I'm not asking you to fix the pain, but to feel the pain. I need you to feel it, Jesus. I need you to enter into it with me. Have you ever noticed that generally people have a propensity to try and avoid other people's pain? People don't often know how to handle someone else's suffering. And so sometimes if you're in the midst of a struggle and somebody says, how are you? There's that moment, right, when you're trying to decide, if I tell them, is it going to scare them off? If I'm honest with them, how are they going to respond to that? It's been my experience that most oftentimes when you share your struggles, when you share your pain, that more often than not, the first thing they'll do at the first chance they can get, they're either going to change the topic, or they'll talk about their own pain. Because they can't handle yours, and so they're going to talk, well, that reminds me of a time when I was going through something similar. You see, we have this natural inclination, this instinct to try and avoid someone else's pain. Dan Allender wrote a book called Leading with a Limp, and he says this. He says, psycholinguists, which are people who study how we talk, how we communicate with each other. Psycholinguists tell us that it is rare for a person to ask more than two meaningful questions of another person, especially if that other person is in distress. We want to help, to quickly resolve the struggle, but we don't want to suffer someone else's helplessness or confusion. Have you ever noticed that to be true? Have you ever noticed that someone asks you, how are you, that even if we are struggling, that we typically respond because we've been conditioned, haven't we? That this person doesn't want to feel our pain. They want to keep it at a distance. And so our natural inclination is to simply say, oh, we're fine. I'm fine. Now, in part, that's the fault of the individual who is responding. But in part, it's also the reason that we give that superficial response is because we've become conditioned to know that that asker, the person that's asking, really wants. What they really want is a superficial answer. And so we find ourselves wondering in that moment, is this a greeting, a statement, is a question, or do they really want to know? Allison, who is a seminary student, she prayed for us just a moment ago. She's a seminary student at Bright Divinity School just across the street. Over lunch this last week, she shared with us a couple of nuggets that she has gleaned from her pastoral care class taught by Dr. Barbara McClure. And one of the things that Allison shared with us that she learned in this class is that the most important thing to do in pastoral care is to be genuinely curious. The most important thing to do in pastoral care is to be genuinely curious. That the greatest gift that we can give someone in the midst of their struggles is to be genuinely curious. And I've been thinking about that all week. And what I keep coming back to is wondering what it might look like here at University Christian Church if we made a pact, if we made a covenant with each other to not just ask, how are you, if we don't sincerely mean that question. Don't see it as an invitation, but instead to be genuinely curious. And at the same time, to make the covenant to commit to each other, to be honest in our response. To say in the midst of our struggles, you know, I'm having a hard time. What would it look like as a community of faith to be that vulnerable, to be that genuine, to be that honest? Now, I know that we have a propensity to try and avoid other people's pain, but I've also noticed that we also have a propensity to try and fix things. Now, just so we're clear, that's not just a male thing. We've got it. We're pretty good at it, but we all do it. Not too long ago, my wife Kelly came home from work. She had a bad day, and immediately, I'm trying to be curious, right? I'm trying to ask questions, but what I noticed and what she noticed is that those questions had an angle to them. How did you handle that when that person said that to you? Well, did you think about doing this? Did you think about doing that? And finally, she said in the midst of her frustration, look, Russ, I don't want you to fix it. I just want to be heard. I just want to be heard. Everyone would close their eyes for just a moment. And if you've ever heard that, if you will just raise your hand right now, if you've ever heard somebody say that, yeah, a few of you. How many of you have heard that in the last 24 hours? Let's be honest. How many of you heard that? How many of you are getting elbowed in the ribs right now? Let's be honest for just a moment. That's our natural inclination to try and fix things. Scott Peck once said, when you try to heal, when you try to convert, when you try to fix someone, you create in that moment chaos. When you try to heal, convert, or fix someone, you create chaos. But yet, if you look at the history of the church, what have we given ourselves to over and over and over again? We try really hard to heal, convert, and fix other people. Could it be that our efforts over the years have created more chaos than help? Parker Palmer was going through a time of deep depression in his life. He was deeply loved by a number of different people, and friends would come to him all the time and try to help him, give him advice. And what he discovered is that that was so annoying, and what they ended up doing is causing more damage than offer to help. But there was a man, his name was Bill, and Bill would show up every afternoon in those moments when Parker could barely get out of bed, didn't even want to go outside, that Bill would simply come every afternoon and just rub his feet. Didn't give advice, He didn't try to cheer him up. He just rubbed his feet. Madeleine L'Engle, the great author, was once asked, what was the most help to you after the death of your husband? And she said, almost without having to think about it, it was the people who said very little, who didn't offer advice or suggestions. They just simply came and they sat with me. And they allowed their tears to mingle with my tears. They were the ones that were the most help to me. And do you remember the story in the Hebrew Scriptures, the story of Job? Job's got this great life. He's successful. He's got a great family. And then all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose in his life. And pretty soon his friends come. His friends come and they show up and they're saying things that, let's be honest, they're not helpful in any way, shape, or form. And finally he's had enough. And Job says to his friends, you smear me with lies. You are worthless physicians, he says. If only you would be altogether silent. For you, that would be wisdom. We so desperately want to use words, to feel as if the words are the only thing that we have. But sometimes, church, the greatest gift that we can offer is not our words, but simply our presence, the ministry of presence. And we try and say things to be helpful, but more often than not, they are not. And the truth is that all of the things that we say are really an attempt to just dismiss the pain. Sometimes the truth isn't helpful. Sometimes advice is not wanted. Sometimes the words that we try and put into tough situations are just better left unsaid. I want to say something, but I want to be careful when I say this. I'm not trying to be malicious or hurtful. But I wonder if in some way, shape, or form that when we do this, that there's something deeper going on. And that is that people can't embrace other people's pain if they haven't embraced their own. People can't embrace other people's pain if they haven't embraced their own. A number of years ago, I was going through a divorce. One of the hardest, most painful times of my life, and I was struggling, church. And I sought out some people that I cared about, people that I knew that they had gone through a divorce too. And so I went to them and I asked, I said, help me, how do I navigate this? And what I discovered is that most of them were not helpful at all. And that is because many of them had not come to terms with their own sorrow and with their own brokenness, and they had no way to help me through mine. And that is because we can't deal with other people's pain if we haven't dealt with our own. Another nugget that Allison gave me from her pastoral care class, she said, people care, we must provide care from our scars, not from our wounds. We need to provide care from our scars and not from our wounds. The father in the story, what he was longing for in that moment was for someone else to embrace his pain. Not to try and fix it or heal it, but simply enter into it. And I wonder, did the father know in that moment that was what he needed the most? Or did Jesus, in all of his brilliance, ask that question so that he could enter into the father's pain, but also so that the father could go deeply into his own story? And at this question, the father became more aware that what he needed more than anything else was to someone to journey with him. And so what if we took this question that Jesus asked of the father and just sort of reframed it a little bit? And what if we asked it this way? What if I were to ask you this morning, how long have you been in pain? How long have you been struggling, suffering, flirting with despair? How long have you been bearing a burden that is maybe no fault of your own? How long have you been looking at your own stuff, your own struggles, your own junk, and saying, it's not really all that bad, I'm fine? try to dismiss it and find ourselves lonely, unwilling, or maybe even unable to deal with our own pain, despair. You see, sometimes the journey from despair to hope, from where we are to where we need to be, if we're honest, that can be a lonely, lonely journey. And all too often we find ourselves trying to make that journey from here to there by ourselves, and we find it too difficult to go alone. And when I look at my own life and my own struggles, those times when I tried to do just that, to go it alone, I just became exhausted. And I'd get stuck, and I'd start believing in that moment that things weren't going to change, that tomorrow was going to be exactly like yesterday. And I found myself just in despair, asking, how long is this going to be with me? And I would lose hope, and I would grow tired. When I was in Atlanta, serving a church there, I met up with somebody who was not part of our congregation, but went to the AA group that met there at our church. And he told me one time, he said, you know what? The thing that I love about AA is that if I ever find myself in temptation, tempted to drink, if I ever find myself in that moment, I know that there are 5 people that I have on speed dial. And he pulled out his phone and he showed me those 5 people. He said, I know that I can call any one of those people and they will drop what they were doing and they will be by my side within minutes. He said, can your church do that? And then he said, Pastor, if you want to see church, come to an AA meeting. So I did. I went to the AA meeting that met in our congregation on Friday nights, and I sat in the back. I didn't say a thing. I just watched, listened, observed. And what I discovered is what church is, or maybe what church should be. Not just a supporting community where people can step in at any moment, drop what they're doing and be by each other's side, but also, maybe just as importantly, when you are in recovery, you are done pretending. You are done trying to control everything. You have no energy left, and you are fully in tune with your brokenness. And in that moment, that's when the healing begins. You see, in AA, they are all about the journey from despair to hope. You see, we all carry our own burdens. We all carry our own sorrow, our own despair. And as people of faith, we are offered this sacred opportunity to carry one another's burdens, to know and to show that we are never alone on this journey, that that's what it means to be a part of a community of faith. As Paul says, to weep with those who weep, to rejoice with those who rejoice, to say to one another in those moments of struggle, in those moments when they find themselves on the side of the road, stuck in a snowbank, scoot over, you and I, we're riding this one out together. You see, church, never are we more like God. Never are we more like God than when we enter into each other's pain without trying to fix, without trying to heal, but simply offering our abiding presence. That's where we find hope, in the promise of God that we will never be alone. So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.